Today, we continue on our quest to understand better how SUSE Linux Enterprise 10 has been brought about and brought to market. And we're going to investigate in this edition a lot about security. So we're bringing in Roman Drachtmuller, who is the SUSE Linux architect for security and a strategist on SUSE Linux security. Roman brings in for us also Dr. Crispin Cowan, one of the inventors of the Linux security modules for the kernel, and Crispin will tell us all about AppArmor. This is all coming up right now on Novell Open Audio. Welcome to Novell Open Audio, the podcast that connects the Novell user community with what's going on inside and around the Novell universe. This is Ted Hager, and we're doing a special series of interviews about SUSE Linux Enterprise 10. And this one, we focus on security of the platform. We're going to look a little bit at desktop and quite a bit at server for security. And for the job, we've brought into the studio with us Roman Drachtmuller, who is our security architect here on the SUSE Linux Enterprise platform. And maybe I don't describe that right. So Roman, welcome to the studio and tell us what your name is actually pronounced like and what your actual job is.
Thanks, Ted. The last name is Drachtmuller, which is a composition of Wire and Miller. So what I'm doing is I'm a security architect and I'm in charge of moving forward security and security properties and attributes in the SUSE Linux-based products in Novell. And in addition to that, I'm also in charge of those common criteria evaluations that I hope we will go into more detail a little bit later.
How long were you at SUSE?
It's been 6 years. SUSE has been existing for 12 years, or was it 13? I think 13 years by now. So six years with SUSE and the last 2.5 years with Novell.
And how did you end up there?
Oh, that's comparatively easy. I'm a paranoid by nature, and I've been working with the SUSE folks as a beta tester for quite some time before I joined them, so they got to know me, and I fit in there quite well. So that's how I started as the head of the security team and moved into the architect position about 1.5 years ago.
So then you're going to be the perfect person for my first question. If you talk to serious Linux zealots out there, the people that are diehard Linux fans, they'll tell you that Linux is more secure than Windows. If you talk to anybody at Microsoft, they're going to tell you that Windows is more secure than Linux. And if you look at analyst reports, they're all over the map and it's hard to tell which is which. From your experience, and yes, you're going to be biased, but from your experience on it, is Linux more secure than Windows? And if it is, why?
I would say so. It's definitely more secure than Windows or any other operating system that is based on a different development model because of the strengths of the development model. In open source, you have a couple of attributes that are not found anywhere else. The openness that is an intrinsic property and attribute of open source software just contributes to that. You can see what the software is doing to your data, and you're able to verify if the software is actually doing what it claims it does. Not only in that it is fit for the purpose, but also in the security add-on to that, namely that it is not doing anything else. There is no way to argue that closed-source software would be better or worse than open-source software with regards to its error proneness, specifically in the field of security, because we can't see it. With open-source software, however, you're able to look at the details and see what's going on inside. There is something else to it. If the source is being delivered along with the binaries, you're able to verify if the vendor has planted any backdoors inside the code, because you can verify if the compiled results that you made match those delivered by the vendor. That's a property that closed-source software vendors cannot come up with and can't cope with.
So how practical is that, though? I mean, most people who buy Linux for the enterprise are not going to sift through all the source code themselves. It's an impossible task to go looking through every package and reviewing it. So we say this like there's this ability to look through the code, but are people really expected to do that kind of thing?
Well, one answer to that is, of course, that the openness of the source code provides you with a certain level of trust that you probably can't transport with closed source software in the same way. So regardless of the quality of the code, there is a way that you can check it for errors or not. If you don't have that freedom, the discussion about it is a little bit academic.
With SUSE Linux Enterprise do we actually have anything that distinguishes it from other distributions out there? Like, are there different types of settings or anything like that in it that make it inherently more secure by default?
Yes, definitely. First, it is a policy and a tradition, actually, that we take much pride in, that packages do not activate themselves by default. So if you install a package, you need to activate it explicitly for it to become active, should it be a service, for instance, such as an Apache web server. That is one thing. The second is that such services that run on the attack surface of an operating system need to be configured in a fail-safe way, meaning if there is a problem with the package, the configuration should contribute to that the damage is comparatively low and the risk and the exposure is low.
You said attack surface a moment ago. I presume attack surface is the term we use for meaning it's exposed out there. It's accessible via the net.
Often, yes. Attack surface is a nice expression just because you can think of it as something that you can make smaller in order to be less exposed. The next thing we do, of course, is also we decide very carefully about which package gets included. And often there are multiple implementations of one and the same protocol, and you have the choice between one or the other. And there is a certain history of security vulnerabilities that basically every piece of software comes with, and that history is very decisive, and that the experience we have gathered with the one or the other package. That may result sometimes in switching from one implementation to the other over the course of a couple of years, but that's the evolution process in it in general. And as I said, it depends very much on the experience gathered with it. That ultimately means that the SUSE security team, and as well as other development teams inside the organization, have a very careful look inside the package and know what the source code is doing. That directly brings into the play what a source code audit in the context of security means. You explicitly look for security vulnerabilities in the code, and that is, of course, something that requires quite a lot of experience.
That means there's like a team that actually does this type of audit, where they actually sift through the code and look for those kind of vulnerabilities, correct?
That's exactly true. The team is in charge of making these security audits as kind of a proactive measure against security vulnerabilities. And in addition to that, they fill the process of working with vulnerabilities that get known over the time with life, as security is to be considered a process and not a state. It could be a state of mind, but that's about it then.
When is a security audit done? Is that just before the product's ready to go? Is it throughout the process? Is it at the outset that there are certain standards?
Sometimes it's a gut feeling that we just put a specific package on the list, but there is also requests coming from the outside that they wish that someone is looking at that more closely. And of course, good candidates are always packages that are security relevant, that run with elevated privileges, or that hold the network port open, or that are activated by default, which some of them exist, of course. So those qualify as very good candidates for security audits because they expose a special risk if they get breached.
And at what point in the product's life cycle or development cycle does it go through these audits?
That's a regularly, permanently ongoing work, and it accumulates and concentrates in the early beta phase of the product development.
When you say ongoing, weekly, every couple weeks, is it just the team's constantly on it?
The team is constantly on it. That's all right. Ongoing work on a permanent basis.
Let's look at the desktop real quick, because there's a couple things that I have questions about on the desktop that are a little bit different for me from previous versions of Linux desktops that I've used. One of them is password caching is done a little bit differently from what I'm used to. Things like password caching for the instant messenger. What's going on there? I mean, you're stashing passwords on the machine. Is that safe practice?
In fact, it actually isn't, but it very much depends on whether the passwords that you have given the system to guard are protected adequately. And what you would usually do is you use a master password, an unlock, kind of a keychain that allows the system to automatically fill in the password forms for the applications to consume. It's a bad practice because, of course, the passwords and privileges to access other systems and other services are not necessarily associated to the account you're using locally. And keeping those separate is always a good idea. However, if the storage of those passwords is protected adequately, it's a feature that is just a matter of convenience versus security. And convenience is, of course, important in such products.
So it's kind of this balancing act between how much pain do you want to cause users versus how much tight security you have. And I suppose there's always the issue of people putting sticky notes under mouse pads and things like that if you make their password situation too difficult for them.
Exactly. And it's a matter of choice here. You don't need to use those. A systems administrator in a large corporation might even decide to deinstall those wallet mechanisms just because company policy might not want that. But in a world like today, we need to be able to provide convenience and security at the same time, and trade-offs for that are necessary, of course.
That whole idea of trade-offs, Roman, it probably leads us into a conversation about what assurance levels are, because, you know, a lot of people talk about, well, that system's secure, that's not secure, and we've got a situation where there's a big misunderstanding. It's not a matter of being more secure or less secure, it's more of a matter of what level of risk you're willing to take and your assurance levels on it. With SUSE Linux Enterprise 8, we certified, and with SUSE Linux Enterprise 9, we certified under this thing called the Common Criteria. And there's this thing called Evaluation Assurance Levels. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what Common Criteria and Evaluation Assurance Levels are?
Well, yes, it's a framework that allows the comparison of the security properties of both the product that you're using, as well as the company's processes that were involved in developing and afterwards maintaining the product. And therefore, it's a means of comparison and knowing if the product and the company is fit for the type of risk you want to expose your infrastructure to. That essentially means that you look at those processes and you check against a large list of questions if certain criteria are met. And if all of those questions are answered yes, if everything has passed, then you get rewarded this certificate that you're after. The evaluation assurance level just tells you how high the confidence is that the product will fulfill its security purposes. And again, this is not a black-white decision. It is a grayscale. And a higher evaluation assurance level would obviously mean that there is more trust that the product is fit for its security purpose. So evaluation assurance level 4 is the highest one can get for a product that is composed of components like a Linux system is. That's just because of the requirements that are given and that architecturally cannot be done at a higher assurance level with Linux.
With SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 9, we achieved that 4, and I think it was even a 4 plus, but that was under a specific profile.
That's right. And the 4 plus, by the way, that's an augmentation to the profile you just mentioned. So the profile is the set of questions you would ask, and the augmentations are additional questions you ask. So we've done more than what was actually necessary for the controlled access protection profile at evaluation assurance level 4. And those two augmentations were flaw remediation and lifecycle management. There is a specific purpose behind that. What you usually do with common criteria is you take a snapshot of the product, either at the time when it has been delivered the first time or at a later point in time, and you investigate if the product fulfills the requirements that are given in the common criteria, in the protection profile. That is both a technical thing as well as a procedural thing. So many things get involved there, such as, for example, how do we deal with vulnerabilities? It's a contradiction in itself because vulnerabilities get known over the time and they get fixed over the time. And you have to take that into account, and using a snapshot to make that investigation over the time will invalidate the actual statement of the certificate. That's why the plus has been added there, these two augmentations, just to reflect that security is to be treated a process, understood a process, rather than a state.
You told me on SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 9 how you had to drive back and forth between Nuremberg and another city that had the laboratories, the company that was actually helping us with the assurance process. And it sounded just like it was a crazy process. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of working with the company. You're driving back and forth over and over again. It's not an easy thing to do. So the question for you now is, you got there with 9. That was great. Are you doing it with 10?
It's going to happen again. Yes, certainly. The thing with driving, it matters if one person is driving, that was me by chance, or another set of 5 people or 3 people or 4 people are driving. And that's why I've been moving around. Either you move the machines and the people to Nürnberg and have them visit the SUSE office, or you go somewhere else and do the tests there. Those were a couple of tests that have been done, numerous amounts of test cases that have been written to verify if the operating system actually enforces its own policy that is documented. We're going to do this again. Of course, the experiences we gathered so far will contribute to the speed. There is something else to that. If your operating system is capable of being used in various different deployment scenarios, if it is capable of delivering many different services, there is of course more work you would have to apply to that operating system in order to get it evaluated, and that's the evaluator's job, and that involves more and more work. We expect that the next evaluations coming up with the SUSE Linux Enterprise Server will supply an even greater use for our usership in that evaluated configuration that has been investigated.
All of that gets a pretty good formal evaluation and everything, but what kind of things is it that somebody can actually do outside of the formal domain? What kind of practices should people be having once they have a platform that they've decided on?
Well, first off, security is a lively process, and there is a lot of communication going on, and there is communication going on from us to our customers. We send out security announcements, and we do that on email mailing lists that don't have an overwhelming traffic, but we believe it is important that people know what is going on. That's why we write these announcements in the first place. So subscribe to these mailing lists, SUSE Security Announce, for instance. The next is, of course, always install the updates that we provide, because that's the major contribution and the respect that we pay to the fact that security is to be considered a process and not a state. And of course, there are also technical measures that can be taken. And one of them is a strength of the SUSE Linux Enterprise is the AppArmor technology. And I wish that Crispin can talk about this.
Well, let's get Crispin on in here.
Hey, Crispin, good that you joined us. This is Crispin Cowan. He's a security architect at Novell. And he's also the inventor of the Linux Security Modules framework that allows for easy plug-in of security modules or modules in the Linux kernel to be able to enhance security enforcing and defining software inside the kernel. One of those pieces is AppArmor, and Crispin can tell us about AppArmor.
All right, Crispin, what's AppArmor all about?
Well, SUSE Linux itself is nicely secure, and the security team works hard to keep it that way, but as soon as you put an application on any operating system, you've introduced a new vulnerability. It's like putting a window in your house. Now there's a new way to get at it. And AppArmor's job is to address that problem by providing application security for the applications that you want to run on your Linux box.
Are we talking about like open source applications? What kind of applications are we talking about that introduce security holes?
All kind of applications, proprietary and open source. Because the problem is that a reliable application does what it's supposed to do, and all open source and proprietary vendors test for that, so it pretty much does what it's supposed to do. Security comes from an application that does what it's supposed to do and nothing else. It's the sneaky something else's that'll get you. The attackers, they go and find that if you feed some strange input to an application, it goes kablooey. It starts behaving strangely, does weird things, maybe even gives them a shell prompt so that now they have a privileged login account on the machine. They can totally control it just because somebody made a little programming error somewhere in the applications that you're running.
And that's any application that can happen with. Roman, you've been talking to us about things like assurance levels and those kind of things about it, and the platform has that. Even if the platform has some kind of certification to it, applications can still compromise a platform.
Certification, the common criteria that SUSE has, that assures that the operating system has the standard features that the world has come to expect from a Unix operating system. Users have to log in before they can log in, and important stuff gets logged to the audit records. So that says that the operating system works. It says nothing about the applications that you put on it.
Is it the same scenario with a Windows machine or a Solaris machine?
Absolutely. Every operating system has this problem. It's only as secure as the applications you put on it.
So what's AppArmor do then?
AppArmor enforces that an application does what it's supposed to do and nothing else. It lets you write a policy, an application profile that says, whenever this application runs, say Apache, it can read, write, and execute this list of files, and it can use these other POSIX capabilities, and it can't do anything else other than what we said in the policy. And so if an attacker tries to trick it into doing something else, then AppArmor will block it.
It's effectively like a whitelist.
Yes, it is a whitelist that says you get to do this and nothing else.
How in the world would somebody actually be able to make something like that? I mean, I'm not technical enough to know what an application is supposed to do. So how am I going to be able to use a piece of software that does that?
That's an excellent point. A serious security expert who really knows an application dead cold could write an AppArmor profile just by hand. But that's really hard and really slow. AppArmor does it for you. It's monkey see, monkey do. You put AppArmor policy for this application into learning mode, and then the rules aren't really enforced, but violations are logged. So then all you have to do is run the application through a typical execution, and you get a log file full of events. And now only a moderate security expert would be needed to turn that into policy, but then we have more software. The AppArmor policy generator reads the log of events and turns that directly into a policy for you by just asking you some questions.
So going back through that then, you're saying there's this thing that looks at what the application does, logs all that, and then interprets it into a policy for you. How difficult is this to use? I mean, what would be the actual user experience in order to get this working?
AppArmor is intended for any Linux or Unix system administrator. If you know how to use grep, chmod, and bash, then you know how to use AppArmor. It uses all familiar syntax.
So you do have to have a little bit of technical background then in order to use it. You don't have to be on steroids as far as
that's
technical
right.
Knowledge.
You don't have to be super uber technical. You just have to be familiar with the command prompt in Linux. And most Linux heads are familiar with the shell. A sysadmin friend of mine likes to say that he likes AppArmor because it allows him to be lazy and feel comfortable.
Okay, once AppArmor is running on a system, what's it do to the application? I mean, if say there is an application that's got some kind of vulnerability in it, somebody tries to exploit it, it's not allowed on the profile for that application, what's AppArmor going to do to the application?
AppArmor, in part, is a kernel module, so it gets right inside the kernel, so there's no way to bypass it. And what the application experiences is it gets back an EPERM, which means error permission. Which is exactly what would happen if somebody had chmodded the file so that you didn't have, say, read permissions on that file. So the application can't really tell that AppArmor is there. It just sees that, oh, I didn't get to do that.
I've had this happen once where one of our IS&T guys set up a blog system, and he didn't stress all the different things on it. We couldn't upload avatars and things like that. He had to add that back in. Now, the application kept running just fine, but are there cases like where the application gets shut down on a behavior and it doesn't keep running fine?
How graceful the application is when it gets a permission error varies from one application to another. In a lot of cases, it's pretty graceful. It just goes, oh, I don't get to do that, and moves on. For non-graceful behavior, it would have to be a critical core part of the application, and you're pretty likely to have exercised that during the initial learning phase. But say you didn't do a complete job of exercising your application and you trip over one of these problems. AppArmor has a post hoc fix it. You can just rerun the AppArmor learning tool, then tell it to go look at the log where AppArmor recorded that it blocked something. And it'll pick that up and say, oh, should I allow this too? Oh, okay, sure.
There's a lot of services that are kind of like your vanilla Linux or Unix services that are out there. You've got FTP, you've got maybe Apache, those kind of things out there. It seems like this would be something that would a lot of people need to do the same kind of things. I understand there are some provisions for that in AppArmor.
AppArmor comes with a standard set of profiles that are installed by default. They come up when you just install SUSE Linux. It comes with another set of profiles that we've prepared them. We think they're pretty good, but they're not exactly right for your use case. You need to use the AppArmor learning tool to adapt them to where, say, you put your web documents. Those are not enabled by default, but you can enable them by just copying them into the AppArmor directory from the extras directory. And if you have your homegrown custom application, AppArmor is built for profiling new applications. That's what it's extremely good at. And we're building a web portal for the users so that AppArmor community will be able to share and enjoy the profiles that they've built by checking them into a website and pulling them down again when they need them. AppArmor includes all the profiles for all the famous server stuff that you've heard of, like Apache and PostFix, the mail servers, the SendMail mail server, Bind DNS. And it also includes profiles for many of the desktop apps that you like to use, like Firefox and Evolution and Thunderbird. Yeah, I love the game instant messaging client because it lets me do Yahoo instant messaging chat with my wife and my mother, lets me do IRC chat with my engineers and my geek friends, and it lets me do groupwise instant messaging with my corporate peers. The problem with game is that it has a vulnerability a week. It's a prime example of features over quality. So you really want to have an AppArmor profile around your game instant messaging client so that when you chat with random strangers, they don't hack your desktop.
So is that what included?
Yes.
As far as running those, then, you're saying it's for desktop applications. It's not just the server applications. It's not just the heavy iron stuff.
It's not just for breakfast anymore, Ted. It's okay. For servers and desktops.
Tell me this one. I've heard that PHP has similar issues, that it's actually something that's possibly easy to exploit. Maybe not PHP itself, but maybe applications are often written on top of it. Is that true?
Yes, PHP applications are really rampantly vulnerable.
How do you handle something like that, where you've got an application that's running on top of Apache already, or in connection with it, and then you've got an application that's been written on that language?
Before AppArmor, PHP was really hard to secure. It was basically code really diligently and be careful who you get your PHP from. Don't take PHP from strangers. Even so, famous PHP applications have a chronic stream of vulnerabilities disclosed on them. AppArmor has a unique capability to protect PHP applications because it has a feature for sub-process confinement. So you can have an AppArmor profile for an individual PHP page that your web server serves up, even though it never appears as a process that the Linux kernel can see.
So in SUSE Linux Enterprise, if somebody wants to find out how to use AppArmor more, if they want to learn how to start implementing it, if they want to get their hands dirty, how do they do that?
You start up Yast, and you click on the AppArmor button, and there's a add a profile wizard and a bunch of other buttons in Yast that are AppArmor controls. From the command line, there's aliases for all of the AppArmor commands that start with AA-. So you type AA-tab at your shell prompt, and you get a list of all the AppArmor commands available.
Oh, so just AA-dash gets you just about anything out there.
Yeah. You can go to opensuse.org/AppArmor. That's the homepage for the project, and it has links to everything, including, of course, the AppArmor mailing list. There's AppArmor General for if you want to hear all the noise, and there's AppArmor Announce if you only want to hear the important announcements.
Crispin, thanks for coming on in.
Thanks.
So Roman, that's good information from Crispin. We get this idea now that we've got this separation. We've got the platform itself. You've talked about how that's been secured. And then Crispin has given us the picture of how we can get any application, proprietary or open source, handled. The combination of these two is supposed to help us with a full platform of security. What is it really that's so distinctive, though, about the approach of the SUSE Linux Enterprise combination with AppArmor? Why is it that AppArmor is distinctive for this distribution?
Well, you're right in that as long as software is written by humans, it will also contain errors. And the use of non-type-safe programming languages, for example, or unsafe coding practices in the first place, is the source of those errors. You could either reprogram the whole world or use a framework like AppArmor. We favor AppArmor over other frameworks that are currently being worked on because it is easy to use, it is easy to configure, easy to deploy, and most important, for something to be secure, it is absolutely necessary that it is comparatively simple. If it is not simple, you will not be able to verify if it actually does its job. And after all, that's the root of the problem with security in the context of having vulnerabilities in software.
Well, Roman, thanks very much for joining us on this edition of Novell Open Audio. I hope it's been a fun time for you being here.
I enjoyed it.
I hope it's also been informative for our audience. Remember that Novell Open Audio is a production of Novell Users International in conjunction with Novell Incorporated. We take all of our feedback from our listeners via our website at www.novell.com/openaudio. And you can send in your emails requesting other topics and things like that to us at openaudio@novell.com. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.